You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
Okay, we are back on the record. CR 2221-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. Concluded the lunch recess. The jurors are all returned and accounted for. And Investigator Edwards is on the stand on direct examination. Exhibit 398 had previously been admitted and was being published as part of direct. Ms. Blake, if you'd like to continue with the witness, you may.
Thank you, Your Honor. And may I be handed Exhibit 398 again?
You may.
And as not wanting to go up. Thank you for that assistance. Investigator Edwards, do you recall leaving off with this slide?
I do.
And again, these were messages sent in the days before the attempted shooting of Tammy Daybell?
Correct.
And can you tell us what we're seeing on this slide?
So the timeline, again, moves right up for October 9th. On October 7th, 2019, you know that Alex signs into the St. Anthony gun range. On October 8th, 2019, he actually conducts a internet search of 6.5 Grindle drop from 100 to 200 yards. And then he visits a site drop from 100 to 300 yards.
And in looking at those searches, are you aware of some of the firearms located in an apartment associated with Alex Cox?
I am.
And was one of those firearms, in fact, a 6.5 Grendel?
It was.
And can you explain a little bit about what the drop means?
I can. Yeah. So the image on the right is kind of I'll give you a visual idea of what we're talking about, but drop is actually what what that bullet does is it comes out of the weapon, and what the searcher is looking for right here is what that distance is and what effect that will have on the bullet. So the farther out the shot, that bullet naturally just drops, right? And you can compensate for that with your scope. You can make an adjustment on your scope so that you can shoot and hit targets that are further out, past 100, 200, 300,000 yards, whatever it is.
And then it looks like there is also a visit to the gun range on October 8th.
There is. There on October 8th, he again signs into the St. Anthony gun range, and then he conducts a Google search for a Rhode Island area code, which is 401.
And did you learn a significance with that 401?
I did.
What was that?
So we can go to the next slide. There's a 401 number that is used by Chad Daybell. To date, this phone has not been located, but two burner phones are used for the first time on October 9th at about 9:15. A burner phone is an investigative cell or an inexpensive cell phone, rather, designed for temporary or sometimes anonymous use, and then it can be discarded.
And I think you indicated there were two burner phones.
There were.
Do you know who those phones were associated with?
Alex and Chad.
And then there's an indication here as well of some real phone numbers. Can you explain what those are?
Yep. The 208-690-9374 number was Chad's real phone. And then the last number on there, the 480-351. Yeah, sorry. I did this last time. I apologize. 480-351-9120 was Alex's real phone number.
And again, what event occurred on October 9th?
So there was an attempted shooting of Tammy Daybell on October 9th.
And then looking down below at those next boxes, can you explain what we're seeing there?
So I took and piled so I could better understand all of the messages and cell phones that were involved in this. The first block at the top, I calculated 90 calls and text messages between Alex, Chad, Zulema, and Lori between 9 o'clock in the morning on the 9th and 2:28 in the following morning on the 10th. So there were 8 text messages between Alex and Chad between 1:19 p.m. and 1:22 p.m. Alex Cox and Chad Daybell's phones are actually near each other between 1:22 and 2:20 p.m. on the 9th. And then there are 15 text messages between Alex and Chad between 7:13 p.m. on the night of the 9th and 8:43 p.m. on the night of the 9th. The attempted shooting occurs somewhere between 9:15 and 9:25. And then there's 4 additional text messages text messages between Alex and Chad between 10:28 p.m. and 10:29 p.m.
And through your investigation, did you determine where Zulema and Lori were on October 9th?
I did.
Where were they?
They were in Arizona.
Did you learn of anything that they were doing on October 9th?
I did.
What was that?
I learned that they were doing a casting about the same time.
Do you know where Chad and Alex were located?
I do.
Where was that?
In Rexburg, Fremont County.
And when we see these messages being exchanged between Alex and Chad, was that a combination of all four phone numbers listed here?
It was.
And can you tell us what we're seeing on this slide?
So this slide and the next three are all kind of describing where specifically that phone was located. So the first phone that we talked about, Chad's burner phone, what I call the 401 number, there are text messages between Alex and Chad between 119 and 122. And those phones, Chad and Alex's electronic devices, are at Alex's apartment, at or near Alex's apartment between 122 and 220 p.m.
And when you were going through this, did you use data, location data collected by other officers or agents?
I did.
You did not plot the data points yourself?
Correct.
And what are we seeing on this slide?
This is the what I call Chad's real phone, the 208 number. There are eight text messages between Alex and Chad between 119 and 122 on the same day. Again, Chad and Alex's electronic devices are near Alex's apartment between 1 and 220.
And on this one?
So this is the Homer J. Maximus Gmail account for Alex, which is attached to Alex's real phone, 480-351-9120. And again, Chad and Alex's electronic devices are at or near Alex's apartment between 122 and 220 p.m.
And with this slide?
So this is where it changes. We know that Alex's real phone then travels south to Idaho Falls. And so between 2:40 and 3:18 p.m., Alex's electronic device travels to Idaho Falls Sportsman's Warehouse.
And on this slide?
On October 9th at 4:11 p.m., there's a transaction that consists of five items that are listed below that Alex purchases. A woodland cap, flint mitts, some gloves, thermo three-hole FAs, and a picture on the next slide, a bullfrog rain jacket, and then a Dr. Pepper.
And you said rain jacket. Did you mean pants?
Pants. I'm sorry. Yes, rain pants.
And these are images of those items?
Correct.
And do you know if these were actually photos taken or obtained by Agent Wright?
Yes.
And what are we seeing on this slide?
So this is now that same day. Alex's electronic device has since gone back up north towards Fremont County and actually drives past the Daybell residence. The device moves to the area of Daybell. You can see that it comes up. The little green CD little image is the Daybell property or residence, and the arrows indicate the travel that Alex's device went.
Through the investigation, did you learn of anyone besides Chad that Alex knew in that vicinity?
No.
And what are we seeing on this slide?
This is a few minutes after he goes past the residence. He basically turns around and comes back past the Daybell property.
As part of your investigation, did you review the events of October 9th of 2019?
I have.
And to be clear, you were not involved in that initial investigation.
That is true.
Can you talk to us a little bit about what's indicated on this slide and what we're seeing?
So this is the two photographs. The one on the left is an overview of the Daybell property. You can see that there's a driveway that comes in off of 200 North, and then another driveway that comes in off of 1900 North. And the image on the right is a photograph at the front of the Daybell residence showing that driveway on 1900 North. On October 9th, at approximately 9:15, the first 911 call to Fremont County Sheriff's Office is made by Joseph Murray, who is Tammy's son-in-law.
And I think you said at 9:15. Is that the time?
I read 9:41. Sorry.
Not a problem. And with 9:15, are you aware that that's when Tammy indicated the event had occurred?
Correct.
So from your understanding, the event was not called in immediately?
Correct. It was not.
And I believe there should be a pointer somewhere up there. Do you see that?
I do.
And can you point out again on the overview image where the two driveways are?
So driveway number one here, and then the second driveway right here, which is the same driveway right here.
And can you, as part of the investigation, did you review some of the contents of Tammy's, of a device associated with Tammy?
I did.
And some accounts associated with her?
Yes.
Do you recall looking at this particular message?
I do.
And can you read it into the record?
Can. On October 13th, 2019, Tammy sent her son, Mark, an email, who was serving an LDS mission at the time. And it says, quote, "I was coming home from clogging. It was about 9:15, and I backed into the front driveway. I was getting some items out of the back seat. We had made freezer meals for enrichment that night, and my clogging shoes. I realized someone was by the back of the car. I looked up, thinking it was Dad or Garth to help me carry stuff in. Nope. It was a guy dressed in all black with a ski mask on, pointing a rifle at me. I think I was a bit in shock because I just said, 'What do you think you're doing?' Then I noticed the rifle was actually a paintball gun. It had a hopper on top. The guy started pulling the trigger, and I could just hear the clicking and a whooshing sound of an empty paintball gun. He stayed standing by the back of the car, just pulling the trigger while pointing the gun at me. For some reason, I kept asking him what he thought he was doing. At that point, I was actually more annoyed than scared because he was standing between me and the door, and he didn't step toward me or even say anything. The scared part came after, when my brain thought of the other things that could have happened. The thought crossed my mind to hit him with my clogging shoes. But first, I looked toward the house and yelled, 'Chad.' Then the guy ran off around the north side of the house. I ran in the house and got Dad and Garth."
In this email, do you see the different references made to the weapon?
I do.
And how does Tammy initially identify the weapon?
As a rifle.
And do you also see where she talks about it actually being a paintball gun?
I do.
And then do you see in parentheses where she added some clarification?
Yes.
And what, if anything, would that indicate to you?
Response, Ms. Blake.
Your Honor, I think in his investigative capacity, I'm asking if that indicated anything to him as an investigator.
Judge, it doesn't allow him to speculate about what was the purpose of this comment in an email. That's speculative.
I'll sustain that.
Tammy provided clarification with relation to that paintball gun. Is that correct?
She did.
Are you aware of anything that can resemble a hopper on a rifle?
Yes.
What would that be?
A scope.
Do you also see an indication that the individual is doing more than simply pointing the firearm?
Yes.
And what did you see in addition to that?
He keeps pulling the trigger, pointing the gun at her.
And do you recall what color the items were that were purchased from Sportsman's Warehouse earlier in the day?
Black.
And I'd previously asked you what on a rifle could resemble a hopper. Can you tell us what we're seeing in that first image, the top one?
So the top image is the 6.5 millimeter Grendel AR that was recovered. It belonged to Alex Cox.
And can you tell us what that bottom image is?
The bottom image is an example of a Tippmann paintball gun that was pulled.
And with that pointer, can you show us where the hopper is on the paintball gun?
On this particular paintball gun, this is the hopper right here.
And in relation to that firearm, can you tell us where the scope is?
This is the scope right here.
And again, we talked previously about your experience with using both assault rifles and paintball guns. Do these appear to be accurate representations of some that you've seen before?
They do.
And in Tammy's description, the gun is being pointed at her?
Yes.
Would that indicate she's looking at the front of the gun?
That's how I would interpret it, yes.
Did you notice anything else in relation to that Grendel 6.5 in relation to the end of that firearm, like the front of it?
Yeah. So I noticed that the front of this has been grooved out or has the capacity of having something attached to the front of it.
And in your experience, what types of things can be attached to the front of an assault rifle?
A suppressor.
If a firearm has a suppressor attached and it's fired, would it still potentially make a sound?
Yes.
What type of a sound might it make?
Whooshing sound.
Did you notice anything? Let me back up. Did you personally observe this 6.5 Grendel?
I did.
Did you make any additional observations in relation to this firearm?
I did.
And what were those?
It's kind of difficult to see on this picture, but you'll notice there's a gap right here. Sorry, my hand's shaking a little bit. But there's a gap between the upper and the lower receiver of the weapon.
And can you talk about what we're seeing here?
This is the gap I was talking about between what is the lower receiver and the upper receiver of the weapon.
And can you tell us a little bit about why that stood out to you?
So this particular weapon, when I observed it, if you tipped or even slightly moved that weapon, there's two pins on these weapons. There's a front takedown pin and a rear takedown pin. Typically, those sit tight within the weapon and they keep the weapon together. It comes apart in two pieces. They have an upper receiver and a lower receiver. And when you take one of that rear takedown pin out, this one here, that weapon actually hinges and comes up. If that makes sense. If you take both of them out, the weapon comes apart in two pieces. So for me, when I saw this weapon and I held it, literally just turning it a little bit caused that rear takedown pin to come out. Didn't take me hardly anything to do that. Most weapons, those sit very secure and tight.
And if something caused that pin to come loose, would the gun still fire?
Judge, objection calls for speculation.
Overruled.
It could.
And you say it could. Would it fire multiple times from your training and based on your training and experience?
So the minute that gap is formed between the upper and the lower receiver, what happens in this weapon is this bolt right here, when the weapon is fired, retracts into the buttstock of the weapon, into the stock. So when that gap is created, this bolt right here cannot retract into the buttstock of the weapon. The gun would malfunction quick. You may get one round off, but you won't get more if that weapon stays separated.
And would that be regardless of if someone kept pulling the trigger?
Yes.
And again, this is an image of the firearm recovered that was associated with Alex Cox.
Yes.
Can you talk to us about what we're seeing on this slide?
So this slide is the timeline of October 9th, the night of the attempted shooting. Starting at 5:28 p.m., there are 6 text messages between Chad and Lori. 7:13 to 8:43, there are 15 text messages between Alex and Chad. Between 9:04 and 9:28, there are 6 text messages between Lori and Zulema. And between 9:15 and 9:25, the attempted shooting occurs. Shortly after the attempted shooting, Chad and Lori are texting at 9:30. We know that Emma, Joseph's wife, calls Tammy at 9:37. 9:41 is that 911 call that Joseph Murray makes. At 9:45, the first Fremont County Sheriff deputy arrives or is dispatched. Tammy then calls Fremont County Sheriff's Office at 9:49, and the first Fremont County Sheriff deputy arrives on scene at 9:52. While the Fremont County Sheriff deputy is on scene, there are 2 text messages between Alex and Lori. There are 4 text messages between Chad and Alex, and there are 2 text messages between Chad and Lori at 10:31. And then the Fremont County Sheriff deputy clears the scene at 10:42. We know that Alex calls Zulema and has a 38-minute plus phone conversation with her at 11:28. And then there are 3 text messages between Zulema and Alex between 12 and 12:28 the following day at that point.
And from your review of the phone records, did you ever observe the content of those text messages?
No.
And then can you tell us about this slide?
So on October 9th, there is an internet search that Alex conducts on how to clean an AR. On October 11th, he then makes a few more internet searches, which include how to drill baffles to make a suppressor. Will a 6.5 Grendel shoot through a windshield? 2008 Dodge Dakota steel body thickness. What gauge steel are the doors of a Dodge Dakota made of? How thick is 22 gauge steel? He then visits the sites, making a homemade silencer. build your own silencer and what caliber would penetrate a windshield.
And the bulk of the searches contained on this slide were 2 days after the attempted shooting of Tammy Daybell?
Correct.
And again, on October 9th, was Tammy Daybell actually shot?
No.
Was there any significance in relation to that Dodge Dakota?
There was.
What was that?
The Daybells owned a Dodge Dakota.
And can you tell us what we're seeing on this slide?
Yeah, you may click through those. Okay. Just continuing with the timeline. October 12th, we know that Alex goes to the shooting range again on the 13th of October, again on the 15th of October. But on the 16th of October, he actually goes to the storage unit and puts the two rifle scabbards, two totes, and two boxes into his storage unit. Yep. Two rifle scabbards, two totes, and two boxes into the storage unit. And then he does not go back to the shooting range again after storing the weapons.
As part of the investigation, did you also focus in on October 18th?
I did.
And why was that?
Because on October 19th, Tammy Daybell was killed.
Objection, Judge. Sustained. Argumentative.
Sustained.
Oh, Judge, I'd like...
I will strike that response.
Do you know if Tammy Daybell was pronounced dead on October 19th?
She was.
And what are we seeing on this slide?
On October 18th, this is Chad's 401 number that is utilizing the towers that are provide coverage to his residence. At 9:54 a.m. when it receives a text message from Alex's 334 number, and Chad returns that text message at 10:40 a.m.
And what are we seeing on this slide?
So this is a October 18th. This was a screenshot of Tammy's phone that was active and playing games until 10:22 p.m. or an image.
And can you tell us what we're seeing on this slide?
So again, this is a cast report that I reviewed on October 18th from 10 to 11:46 p.m. We know that Alex Cox's phone is near the Daybell residence from 10:07 to 10:45 p.m. at the LDS Church, which is just south of the Daybell property, about 2.6 miles away. Alex's phone does not provide any data from 10:45 until 11:53 when it's actually driving away from the LDS Church on Highway 20. We know that Alex's phone then goes to Idaho Falls and where it stays at a hotel.
Do you know at that time if Alex still had a residence in Rexburg, Idaho?
I don't remember if he did or not at that point.
And again, through the investigation, did you learn of anyone besides Chad Daybell that Alex knew in that vicinity?
No.
And can you tell us what we're seeing on this slide?
So this timeline is similar to the one from the 9th. This covers the 18th to the 19th of October between 6:13 and 12:35 a.m. Between 6:13 to 8:24 p.m., there are six text messages between Chad and Lori. Between 6:56 and 8:24, six text messages between Lori and Alex. At 8:44, Chad texts Alex. At 8:47 to 9:04, there are 12 text messages between Alex and Lori. 8:52 p.m., Lori texts Chad. 9:35, Alex texts Chad. 9:43, Chad texts Lori. 9:59 to 11:12, there are 11 text messages between Zulema and Lori. At 10:07, Alex's phone arrives at the LDS Church that we just talked about. Between 10:12 and 10:28, there are four text messages between Alex and Chad. 10:22, Tammy's phone is active playing games. 10:23 to 10:54, there are 10 text messages between Alex and Chad. And at 11:28, there's a single image that is deleted from Tammy's phone. Chad then sends two text messages to Lori between 11:34 and 11:35. At 11:46, like we just talked about on the last slide, Alex's phone leaves the LDS Church parking lot and heads south. At 11:53 to 12:09, Alex calls Lori. At 12:10, Lori sends Zulema a text. And at 12:35, Chad sends Lori a text.
And during this time frame through the investigation, did you learn Lori was in Hawaii?
Yes.
And is it your understanding Zulema was in Arizona?
It is.
Where did you understand Chad and Alex to be?
Both in Fremont County.
Can you tell us what we're seeing? Actually, I'll back up here. Are you aware of where Tammy was ultimately buried?
I am.
And where was that?
In Utah.
Do you know when her funeral was held?
I do.
When was that?
So her funeral was held on October 22nd in Springville, Utah.
So 3 days after she was pronounced dead?
Correct.
And can you walk us through the messages that appear on this slide?
Okay. October 20th, 2019, between 7:48 and 8:33 a.m., me and Lori is in Hawaii. Lori sends a text, and again, this is in pink and blue. I'm missing you more. I need you desperately. Heart emoji. I can't wait. Kiss emoji. Kiss emoji. Need you to hold me tight. That would be great. What about the idea of you coming here Thursday or Friday? Or do you want me to come home? Question mark. Chad replies, their apartment is haunted and we can't clear the place. So they are looking to move anyway. And I have the perfect place for them. I need to be here to get sorting the financial stuff. And I truly need your help. So please come home Thursday so we can spend the night together. Then as soon as I have things under control, we can return. I seriously want you to look for a condo for us while you are there that we could return to at the first of the month. Lori replies, I know exactly where we should be. I don't really care where we are as long as you are holding me forever. Heart emoji. Chad, I want to get going full steam ahead on Lily workout plan. Tighten the abs, get a full body tan, grow out my hair. This could be really good for both of us. She replies, I love that plan. It's not soon enough though. This is torture. Maybe you need to clear my mind so I can't remember how much I love you. Heart emoji. I will try, but it feels like Raphael and Lily are together about 100%. Not sure it will ever be lower again. That's true. I do feel you. Heart emoji. I feel lovesick. I can't sleep. I don't want to eat. I just want you. It's so consuming. And then two emojis, and I'm not sure what those are. I know exactly how you feel. I'm feeling sad, but it isn't for the reason everyone thinks.
And when we look at these messages again, did you know where Lori was located around this time?
She was in Hawaii.
And Chad's indicating to her that she should look for a condo there?
Yes.
And this is the day after Tammy's been pronounced dead?
Correct.
Was there anything else in particular that stood out to you about this message, about this series of messages?
The last text message from Chad. I know exactly how you feel. I'm feeling sad, but it isn't for the reason everyone thinks.
We'll be back in session.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and remain standing if you'd like. I think the jurors are lined up and ready to be brought in. So, Mr. Bailiff, once they're ready, please have them come in.
I won't ask to start now, Judge.
All right.
Is present and accounted for.
All right, thank you. Please be seated. We're back on the record on CR 2221-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. Cross-examination can commence at this time, Mr. Pryor. We do have completed the mid-afternoon recess, and I presume the exhibit's been prepared that you were going to use, so if you'd like to commence with cross, you may.
Thank you, Judge. And if, again, could I utilize the Elmo device, and this would be for in relation to Exhibit 398 that the state had prepared in this case.
Yes, you may use the Elmo.
Thank you, Your Honor. And before we start with that, investigator, my understanding is that the information you provided today through your testimony was the result of a number of agencies providing you information. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So the Fremont County Sheriff's Office provided you information, correct?
They did.
Rexburg Police Department provided you information.
Correct.
The FBI.
Yep. Yes.
And other agencies. In putting together this summary, you reviewed all of the information and prepared the summary based on the information that was provided to you. Is that correct?
That is correct.
In addition, were you provided all of the police reports, all of the recordings, all of the data evidence, or was it a process of these agencies providing you what you specifically asked for?
So during the time that our office, the Attorney General's office, was involved in this case, we were being provided those things. Once we no longer on the case, when the case went back to Fremont County, we were no longer provided any other additional information.
So when you say those things, were you provided the actual police reports in regards to this investigation?
I was.
Okay. And you were provided the interviews?
I was.
And all of the emails?
We were provided three different hard drives of information.
Okay. And you took the liberty, like I did, going through every single piece of evidence, right?
I'm going to tell you, I did not. I did not look at every single piece of evidence.
Okay. Okay. Did you track the number of phone calls and the frequency of those phone calls between Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell on a daily basis?
No.
What you're testifying to is what you observed on particular days that you chose regarding those phone calls. Is that right?
That's fair.
And you did not look at how frequently
or drives past the
daily Chad Daybell or Lori to Alex communicated on a daily basis. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's probably all of it. If you're talking all of the phone calls, no, I didn't look at all of those.
Okay. So you can't say that the frequency of these phone calls is unusual. You can only say that the phone calls and or the text messages and the communication took place on those particular days. Would that be fair?
Say that again.
You can't say that the frequency of phone calls on certain days that you highlighted is unusual. All you can say is that on those particular days, the phone calls that took place are documented in your report. Is that fair?
Documented in my report's not fair, but yeah, I would say that I focused in on those because that's where the investigation led me.
Okay. But again, you didn't say, well, on October 1, they had 15 phone calls with each other, but oh, on October 2, on a day of relevance, they had these phone calls. You didn't compare it to non-eventful days with eventful days. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's probably correct.
Okay. Now, I'd like, if we could, just slowly go through your timeline, and I won't be so slow, but we'll...
okay.
I promise. I won't be so slow, but we are going to hit a few things, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
Okay.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.